I'm Karen Hartglass, your host of today's show. It's all about food. It's all about food. I think I'm going to say that one more time. It's all about food. And it really is. Our personal health, the health of the planet, and all life on Earth is related to the food that we eat. And we talk a lot about that on this show. We talk about the environment. I haven't mentioned this in a while, but I just want to say that one of the major causes, if not the major cause, of global warming today is the factory farming of animals, animal agriculture, and it's also horrifically cruel and so unnecessary because we don't need those animals for food. What we need is beautiful, delicious, fresh fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes, nuts, and seeds. And if you don't believe me, you can ask the doctor, because I have a wonderful guest on today, Dr. Michael Clapper. He's a physician with training in surgery, anesthesiology, orthopedics, emergency room medicine, and obstetrics. Dr. Clapper is the director of the Nonprofit Institute of Nutrition Education and Research and has performed research on the pros and cons of vegan nutrition and other dietary styles of health enthusiasts. He's also a member of the Nutrition Task Force of the American Medical Student Association. Dr. Clapper graduated from the University of Illinois College of Medicine in Chicago in 1972. He served his medical internship at Vancouver General Hospital in British Columbia, Canada, and had additional training at the University of California Hospitals in San Francisco. Dr. Clapper has contributed to making two PBS television productions, Food for Thought and the award-winning Diet for a New America. Dr. Clapper has served as an advisor to the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, NASA, project on nutrition for long-term space colonists on the moon and on Mars. Dr. Clapper believes strongly that proper nutrition and a balanced lifestyle are essential for health and in many cases make the difference between healing an illness or merely treating the symptoms. Dr. Clapper, welcome.
Thank you, Karen. Good to be with you.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for being who you are. You have done such an incredible amount of work that has helped us so much, and from your foundation, so many others have been able to build upon and do more great work.
Well, lovely. I take that as a high compliment coming from you.
Well, you're one of the very, very special ones on this planet. I wish we could clone you.
Yeah, I'm looking for that Xerox machine to lay down on and make about 8 copies of me, because I've got, I would send one just to do research and another one to see my patients and another one to go surfing on Maui, I guess.
There we go. Because that's really important, too. You know, there's a lot of things that are going wrong on the planet, but I think the real way to heal it is with love and joy.
Hear, hear.
So we have to take care of ourselves by having a good time sometimes. Okay,
agreed.
So
it's very important.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to tell the listeners, I know a lot of people listen, well, they're listening online, obviously, but and a lot of people go to the archives, but if you do have any comments or questions during the show, you can call in at 1-888-873-4643 or send me an email at info@realmeals.org. info@realmeals.org. This is a great opportunity to ask the doctor. So you're a promoter of the plant-based diet. How did that
get started?
How did you get involved with fruits and vegetables?
Oh my, that's a long story, but it was a convergence of a number of factors. I'll tell you the straight nutritional aspects. We can start with that, I guess. I was a resident in anesthesiology at University of British Columbia Hospitals in Vancouver, and I was working on the cardiovascular anesthesia service, and day after day I was putting people to sleep and watching surgeons open up their chests and open up their coronary arteries and pulling out these deposits of yellow, waxy, greasy stuff called atherosclerosis. atherosclerosis, and that was clogging them up. It was not only in their heart arteries, it was in the carotid arteries up to their brain and the renal arteries to the kidneys. It's a total body disease. There's a saying, you're as old as your arteries, and nothing will age you like having this atherosclerotic gunk build up on the artery walls. And I was looking, and I said, you know, that stuff looks like chicken fat. And a little voice told me, you know, there's a good reason for that. It is chicken fat and beef fat, and all the fat of the animals we're eating is a large component of that. And my dad died of clogged arteries, and I knew I was going to lay on that table with the Stryker saw going up my sternum. And I said, no, I don't think I want to do that. There are people that are very uncomfortable when they wake up. And I stopped running animal fat through my arteries, and boy, my cholesterol dropped from 240 down to 150. My blood pressure had been 150 over 90, dropped down to 110, 70. 20-pound spare tire of fat around my waist just melted away. I felt great waking up in a nice, light, lean body every day. And I decided I didn't want to eat animals. I looked in the nutrition books. There's nothing in animal products that our body really needs, and my body just spoke very clearly for the validity of doing that. And we can talk more about the specifics of the foods, but a plant-based diet certainly worked for me nutritionally. I left anesthesia, went back to general practice, and started telling my patients what to eat, because prior to this, I never knew what to tell my overweight, high blood pressure, diabetic patients. You know, you really should lose some weight, George, but I really didn't know what to tell them. But now I knew what to tell them. You know, stop running all that animal fat through your arteries. And I sent them off. I had a friend who gave vegetarian cooking lessons, and sent them off to her classes and to learn how to make all these delicious soups and salads and greens and students' main dishes. And indeed, these diseases we were told never went away. High blood pressure certainly does go away. I was able to stop their high blood pressure pills. People with type 2 diabetes on insulin, I was taught, well, once a patient's on insulin, they will always be on insulin. Well, their blood sugars came to normal, and they didn't need to be on insulin anymore. And it got to be exciting to see these weight-related problems getting better. And a lot of the inflammatory diseases, rheumatoid arthritis and lupus and these inflammatory diseases, they get better. We can talk about why. So all the way around, medically and nutritionally, it was just a remarkable transition for me personally and in my medical practice. And when I said it was a convergence of forces, it happened at a time in my life, in my mid-30s, when I had done my medical school at the University of Illinois. I spent many nights in the trauma unit at Cook County Hospital, and I saw the effects of violence and all the shotgun blasts and stabbings and pistol wounds. And I wanted to get the violence out of my own life. And so one day over a steak dinner, I was pontificating to a friend of mine about wanting to get the violence out of my life. And he looked at me and said, well, that's very nice, but if you want to do that, you should have a look at that piece of meat on your plate, because your desire for the steak in your mouth causes the death of the animal. And as soon as he said that, that little voice again spoke up and said, you know, he's right. And and it made me look at the meat in my diet from a whole other point of view, as well as the leather shoes on my feet and the leather wallet in my pocket. And suddenly I realized I really do have to get the animals out of my life here, because I grew up on a farm. I love animals, and if you really love them, don't be responsible for their suffering and death. So it didn't take long. I found myself a vegan physician, both for personal reasons and medical reasons, and boy, that was 30 years ago, and I haven't looked back since. I certainly...
Well, you know, we always have the image of the good doctor as someone who really cares about people and patients and want to help people and help the world, and you definitely sound like that character. And and yet but so many doctors today, we don't see that, and
that's what's baffling to me, and maybe we'll get to that in a minute. But I wanted to mention the PBS film Diet for a New America, which came out 21 years ago. That story that you described about the fat in the blood and in the patients all over their heart and arteries, and it's just an image that I can never forget. And personally, I think that was the most memorable part in the film that people still talk about when they talk about it. Because a picture says a thousand words. You can explain what you're talking about when you can see that fat. It's really incredible. And so what I wonder is, I mean, there are so many doctors that do that all the time. And why don't they make the connection? Why don't they make the leap? That's what's baffling to me.
Yeah, and to me as well. You know, in the real world, you know, why aren't doctors more aware of this? Because when you look, and again, that was 21 years ago. Now, you know, we're in an epidemic of obesity and obesity-related diseases. It's bankrupting this country. I watched this huge healthcare debate going on, you know, recently, and it was so sad to me because really, they talk about healthcare reform, but nobody's talking about health care. They're talking about who's going to pay for the disease care.
Yeah.
Nobody's talking about changing people's diets and making the junk food more expensive and giving out vouchers for fruits and vegetables. Make them a lot cheaper for people. If you really want health care, make it easier for people to eat healthier because there's a huge, huge dietary component to these diseases. So to get back to your question, why don't doctors see it? One, we're not taught. There's Western medicine seems to have contempt for the role of nutrition, that you can eat anything you want in America and it really won't affect you, although that's starting to change, I think. So doctors aren't taught about it in school. Plus, it gets down to the doctor's own personal life. It means they've got to change what he's eating. It means that his mother was wrong. When he served the steak and the ice cream, mom and dad were wrong, you know. And that's a hard thing to come to grips with. And my teachers were wrong. And if it was important, I would have learned about it in medical school. And I liked the way a T-bone steak tastes. And I liked that cream pie after dessert. And so there's a huge inertia. There's both there's an ignorance of the importance of nutrition, and then a huge inertia from their own personal lives. And it's easier just to go out for that cheeseburger and not think about it, and just write that prescription for Lipitor. And that's what Western medicine has come to at this point. Hopefully, you know, we're trying to change that, and hopefully it's going to, and it will change one way or the other. The system is going to demand it because we can't continue paying for it the way we are. It's going to be cheaper to help people eat better, and we'll all get healthier for it.
Gosh, I can't wait to see that happen. There are so many things now pointing to the vegan diet as being a diet of necessity if we're going to continue living on this planet just for the environment alone and our health problems.
Absolutely.
Something that has to happen.
Absolutely. I mean, if everybody on planet Earth ate like Americans do, well, there just is not that much water and soil and nutrients available. It physically can't be done, and it shouldn't be done. The truth is we thrive on plant-based diets, and we get sick and fat and sick and clogged up when we eat animals, and the system just can't afford this Band-Aid medicine, which is all the bypass grafts and the stents and all of that stuff. It's just putting a Band-Aid on a bleeding wound. You got to get at the source of the illness, and it's running all this fat and animal protein through the bloodstream, and we've got to come to grips with it, especially where the kids are concerned. My God, the obesity in children, it's stunning.
Yep.
It's frightening. There's a tsunami of disease in this next generation going to run us over on every level, financially and socially, because our kids are getting so obese. We really have to come to terms with this.
Well, and you know, one thing I'm always trying to do on this show is to show how a plant-based diet is a diet of joy, a diet of abundance, a diet of good eating, good, delicious eating. It's not a diet of deprivation. And, you know, I've had lots of different people, chefs and cookbook authors, talk about all the wonderful different foods that are available when you lift the veil and open the door. It's just the variety, the diversity, it's amazing.
Yeah, it really is. And I spend a lot of time in my practice doing nutritional counseling. And, you know, we can talk about the subtleties of various foods and various supplements. But, you know, in 3 minutes, I can lay it out what I basically tell my patients. And if your listeners want to get a pencil and paper, here is the basic pattern that works surefire every day. You follow this basic pattern, and you will get lean and healthy. And
I've got my pencil. I'm ready. Lay it on it.
All right, fair enough. All right. So, and you can vary it, you know, as your taste dictate, but basically come breakfast, have fruit, have a big bowl of whatever fruit you like, cut up cantaloupe and melon and bananas and anything you like, and have some oatmeal if you'd like. But we have fruit and oatmeal for breakfast, and put a little rice milk or soy milk on it if you'd like. But basically fruit and oatmeal is a good breakfast. You can have some of these other cold cereals, but they get a little junky. Be careful that they're not all sugar-laden and processed. You want whole grain cereals. So basically, fruit and oatmeal is the best breakfast. And then lunches and dinner follows the same basic pattern. And it's going to sound a little bland when I say it, but bear with me. But it's salads and soups and steamed greens. We can talk about other things, but let me deal with those three. At least once a day, have a big helping of salad. Have and whatever kind you like. There's no end of ways to make salads delicious. Put your favorite greens in there and sprinkle some pine nuts or raisins or tofu chunks or anything you'd like, but make a big, glorious salad at least once a day, if not twice a day. You can't overdose on it. And some low-fat salad dressing on it. You have lots of those. But yeah, start off your lunches and preferably dinners as well with a big, big salad. And two essential pieces of kitchen equipment you need. One is a vegetable steamer. You can get it for $5 at Kmart. It's a little basket with holes in it. And when you go to the market, look for anything that's emerald green. I don't care if it's kale or chard or broccoli or collards or bok choy. Anything that's dark and green, get it. Okay, bring it home, wash it up, cut it up, throw it in the vegetable steamer. You have a pot, put about an inch of water in it, bring it to a boil, lower your basket in there, and put your veggies in it, put the top on. And 3 minutes, 5 minutes of steam coming up through there, take it out and put it on a plate, squeeze some lemon juice over it, or you've got a big plate of emerald green goodies there. As I said, squeeze lemon juice over it, put some salad dressing over it, but have a big helping of steamed greens at least once a day. The calorie for calorie, there is no better food on the planet than steamed green vegetables. It is rich in phytonutrients, it's rich in calcium, fiber, and there's nothing bad in them. So a big plate of steamed greens once, preferably twice a day. And the third component is a hearty vegetable soup. And people say, don't make me make soup. My mother couldn't even make soup. I don't want to make soup. Here's how you do it that makes it real, real easy. And it's the second essential piece of equipment that everybody should have, and that's a crock pot, a slow cooker. Here's what you do with it. And people, I have one on my shelf, in my cabinet. Great. Get it out of the cabinet, rinse it and wash it off, bring it down on the counter. It should be there and used. Here's what you do. When you're at the market, say Saturday morning, go to the farmer's market or go to the grocery store, and while you're buying your steamed greens, buy all the veggies that you like. It's your soup. Only put things in it that you like. And so get carrots and potatoes and celery and onions and whatever you like in a nice vegetable soup. Bring them out home again. Rinse them off, cut them up, throw them in the crock pot. Fill the crock pot up almost to the top with water. If you want something heartier in there, throw in a cup full of lentils or beans or quinoa or rice or millet. You can make it hearty if you like. Throw in some favorite spices, Italian spices, East Indian spices, tomatoes, sauce, whatever you like. Spice it up at your soup. Put the lid on, hit the button, go to bed. That's all. Mm-hmm. Next morning, it's all full of, you know, it's cooked overnight. Next morning, it's full of vegetable rice and bean and lentil soup or whatever you put in there. It's delicious. The whole house smells this lovely fragrance when you wake up in the morning. And now you got this big crock pot full of vegetable soup. It took you 15 minutes to make it, and now you can eat off of it for 3 days. Just turn it down to low. You know, you don't have to turn it off. Turn it to low so it stays at eating temperature. And every time you walk by, ladle out a nice bowl of hearty vegetable rice and lentil soup or whatever it is you put in there. So now you've got those three components, a salad and steamed greens and a bowl of vegetable soup. That should be the basis of every lunch and every dinner. If you want to have something else on top of it, if you want to have some tofu or any type of other protein, have a small amount of it, but fill your stomach up with the salad and the soup and the steamed greens first. And then if you want to have any additional protein feature, make it very small, and you can eat all of this you want, and it will leave you lean and healthy. And that soup, you say you made it up on Saturday night, so Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. By Tuesday night, you should be through with the soup, okay? And Wednesday, do it again. Okay, so then Thursday, Friday, Saturday, you got three more days of soup. So Saturdays and Wednesdays make up that big crock pot full of soup. So there's always a crock pot full of hot vegetable soup on your kitchen counter there. So there's no excuse that you have to go out for this or that. Restaurant food is full of fat and salt and sugar, and I used to eat a lot in restaurants. I don't anymore, and because they're full of fat and salt and sugar, and it's a novelty. You know, once a month I'll go out for a restaurant meal, but I sure don't do that much anymore. But I don't need to because I've got all this wonderful vegetarian food waiting for me. And if people do that, if breakfast is fruit and oatmeal, and lunches and dinners are soups and salads and steamed greens. And you can have three helpings of each every meal. You can't overdose on it. And you take a walk every day, and you laugh a lot. Watch what the magical things that happen in your body. You're going to wind up lean and healthy, and that blood pressure is going to go down, and that waistline is going to come down, and your needs for all those medications are going to go away, and you'll feel how great it feels to wake up in a healthy body every day. And So this is the basic skeleton to build your diet around. If you want more protein, and throw in more chickpeas and lentils and legumes and nuts and seeds, that's fine. If you want a little more calories, if you're underweight or whatever, then have some sweet potatoes or starchy vegetables or grains like millet or quinoa. That's fine. You can throw them in the soup or make it put it on the side dish. That's all fine. And the nice thing is you don't have to worry about portion control. You can eat all of this you want. It's mostly fiber and water. It just passes right on through you, which makes sure it takes care of your constipation problems, and your colon will be nice and happy and healthy with this food. And it's cheap. Beans are cheap. Lentils are cheap. Veggies are cheap compared to, unfortunately, not compared to fast food, junk food, but that's because the meat industry is subsidized. And if beef really sold for what it costs to produce it, hamburgers would cost $40 each. But the government subsidies skew the economics of it. But that's another story we can talk about. But basically, if people followed this fruit and oatmeal for breakfast and soups and salads and steamed greens for lunches and dinners and any other protein feature they want, they're going to find wonderful things happen to their body. It's simple, it's cheap, it's easy, convenient, and really no excuse not to do it this day and age.
Wouldn't it be something if the prescription that most doctors wrote was what you just told us?
Well, I could hang up my stethoscope and go surfing. It'd be wonderful. Nice to see your doctor just at the farmer's market. You know, that'd be the only place you ought to see your doctor, when you're buying your kale and your beans at the farmer's market. That's to be the only place to see your doc. I agree.
Yeah, I have a new insurance policy. And so I started with a new group of doctors, and I went to the new primary care doctor. He's old and probably very old school, and we were just having a big fight. He actually said when I said, but heart disease and diabetes, they're primarily caused by poor diet, and he was like shaking his head and saying,
"Oh, genetics. It's your genes, and we don't know the causes of these diseases, and that's all fluffy, new age, touchy feely stuff. Don't tell me about that."
Yeah,
he's scared, and he's afraid to get sued for malpractice. It's not standard of care, and to talk about nutrition, that's fringy stuff as far as the medical establishment goes. And I tell my patients, after I counsel them, and I say, listen, and I talk to them about, listen, your need for blood pressure pills is going to go down. You're going to get lightheaded when you stand up. You tell your doctor that you've changed your diet, you know, on a low-salt, high-fiber, plant-based diet, and to tell your doctor, listen, you're going to need to cut my pills in half in the dosage and then cut them down again and be ready to stop the medication. And the same thing with insulin dosage and oral hypoglycemic agents for diabetes. You got to tell the doctor that I've changed my diet. But after that, I say, listen, beyond that, don't talk to your doctor about nutrition. It's just going to set off an argument, and he's going to feel threatened and confronted. Just do this, and just tell your doctor, listen, I've changed my diet to a lower-fat diet, and if I start getting lightheaded when I stand up, is it okay to reduce my medicine? And leave it at that, because my colleagues, unfortunately, are not on the same frequency that we are here, and they don't recognize the power of good nutrition. So it's a strange time in medicine. I think my profession is going to be, we're going to look back at this year and be very embarrassed about how we overlooked this huge, huge factor in our patients' disease spectrum. And,
well, for some reason, and I'm not sure how it all started, but most people really respect their doctors and look at doctors as God almost, or, you know, someone that you really listen to because what they say is the last word. And so for so many doctors, not to give this information out is really criminal.
Yeah, and I don't want to denigrate my profession. Thank God for modern medicine. And you get sick or injured. Thank heavens for these, you know, the high tech medicine that they can use. And absolutely. When I was in med school, my chief surgical resident said, you know, you can divide all of medicine into horizontal medicine and vertical medicine. You know, if you are so sick or so injured that you are horizontal on the gurney, then Western medicine is just what you need, and they are wizards for saving your life and putting your body back together again. But if you're vertical, you're walking around, not so much. And unfortunately, 90% of medicine is vertical medicine. Most people aren't that sick. But if you're in the horizontal category, thank God for modern medicine. And I don't want to be too flip here. And if you're in heart failure or your thyroid is way out of whack, modern medicine has a lot to offer you. And I'm not minimizing it. And it is. And it does leave us in awe. And I'm a physician, and I'm in awe of my specialty colleagues who can do all these wonderful procedures and things, but seldom does their wizardry get to the root causes of it, since so much of what they're seeing is nutritionally based. But you know, we are in awe of modern medicine, but unfortunately it still has overlooked, you know, it's trite to talk about the elephant in the room and the gorilla in the room, but nutrition certainly is that, and modern medicine certainly, you know, it will leave you in awe, but still people have to take responsibility for their own health and really get down to, okay, why am I overweight? Why is my blood pressure up? Why have I developed diabetes? Why are my joints all sore? Why is my skin erupting? The first question you should ask, what am I eating that might be doing this? If you just start with that question and then do some research and go to a nutritionally based physician or a similar type of healer, but it might not be your primary care doctor, and it may not be your specialist that's looking after you. But if you start realizing that there might be a nutritional factor in my disease, and are these pills I'm taking every morning just covering up the symptoms? What is really going on here? Why is my diabetes getting worse? Why is my weight going up? It's what you are putting in your mouth. Just really be open to that possibility, because we're not supposed to have these diseases. The body is not supposed supposed to get fat and hypertensive and diabetic. That's not supposed to happen. And it's a 21st century, 20th and 21st century phenomenon. It didn't used to happen. And in most of the world, it doesn't happen. In developing nations, people stay lean and active all their lives because they're eating a plant-based diet and they're out working physical work every day. But we've gone the opposite direction. We've adopted an animal-based diet, and we sit all day and shovel this high-fat, high-calorie, high-protein food stream into our mouths, and it's inevitable. We're going to get fat and clogged up, and then you wind up taking pills.
Well, people need to take responsibility for themselves, and we need to take a short break right now, so Dr. Clapper, please stay with us because we have a lot more to talk about.
Great.
So we'll be right back. Dr. Michael Clapper. And we're talking about a plant-based diet and how important it is for our health. So one of the things I noticed, Dr. Clapper, is that people have forgotten what to do in the kitchen. And so many people have gotten used to going to a restaurant, buying fast food, or buying prepared food in their supermarkets. And we seem to have lost this skill of making the simplest of foods. So when you talk to your patients about eating this way and tell them what to do, how do they respond?
Some of them, their eyes go around like Las Vegas slot machines.
Right.
And until I say, listen, it's not that hard, you know. You can, and we go through this again. You can cut out. You can open a cantaloupe and scoop out the inside. You know, you can do that. You can cut up an apple. You can cut up a banana. Again, it's as simple as for breakfast. Just peel a banana and eat an apple. Just do that if you want, and throw some. Yeah, if you want, just, you know, cold cereal and with some rice milk on it and a couple of strawberries, that's fine. But breakfast, get some fruit in the morning. Just somehow, just do that. And if the folks are just in Pop-Tart land, and that's all they know to eat for breakfast, you got to have get real with them. And if they're sitting in my office and they're overweight and diabetic and with high blood pressure, you have your choice. You got to put out a little effort here. You're right, Americans. We've become a push button instant society here. And give me the pill. Let me do what I always do. But there's an old saying, if you don't change where you're going, you're going to wind up where you're headed. And that's exactly with the fast food culture here. We do have to change it. So, as I said, just have an apple and a banana and a little oatmeal or prepared cereal for breakfast. And the soups and salads and steamed greens, I say, listen, you can buy salad. You can buy it pre-made at the store. You can get a bag of salad. Just open the bag and throw it on a plate and pour some salad dressing on it. I mean, you got to do something, man. Good heavens. Just open up a bag of salad and eat it. And the steam, you got to get some greens in. And you can eat raw broccoli or raw kale, but pretty tough and fibrous. And, 2 minutes in a vegetable steamer, really, I'm a bachelor. I'm going to do it myself. And it isn't that hard to cut up some broccoli and throw it in a steamer. You take the pot and you put in an inch of water and you put it on the stove and you turn it on. And while the water's coming to the boil, I rinse off the broccoli and take a knife and cut it up into pieces. And by the time I'm through, I lower the basket in, the little steamer basket, and throw the broccoli in and put the lid on. I mean, how hard is that? Good heavens.
It's just so incredible. We have so much technology that people use all the time. And the simplest things that are the most important for us are just seem so out of reach for so many people.
Yeah, I mean, it's... And you wonder, how the dinosaurs became extinct. Humans, they fast fooded themselves to death. It's easier to stop at Burger King, I suppose. But you buy what you're going to buy the diseases that get you. And we can talk about healthier eating in restaurants and all that stuff, but it's almost an oxymoron. It's going to be, unless you just go into the Chinese restaurant and order steamed vegetables, you can do that. But after a while, it's, why are you bothering? You might as well just do it yourself at home, much cheaper, and less salt in the food there. And we can talk about healthier eating in restaurants. It's a valid concern. There's some folks who just eat out in restaurants a lot, but even so, you order this, the spaghetti instead of the steak, and you order the marinara with the pasta primavera with the vegetables instead of the meatballs. I mean, there are healthier ways to order in restaurants, Again, for those listeners who can, heard what I said about the crock pot, it really does, it takes 20 minutes and you got soup for 3 days. It's really not that hard to do. And I would urge people just make that effort. It's so, you're going to save money. It's going to be cheaper in these days. It's got to mean something to people. But you can make 3 days worth of vegetable soup with 20 minutes worth of labor while you're listening to the radio. It really isn't that hard. But I imagine you can, you can. There's instant soups, I suppose. You can, and canned soups, but they're expensive. They're much cheaper to do it yourself. But yeah, you can open up a can of vegetable soup and throw it in, heat it up on the stove. You can do that. It's full of salt and all that. It's not the best, but sure beats, sausage pizza. So people have to decide. Someone said, when people are arguing all the time, would you rather be right or happy, and the same thing. You want to be, you want to be a fast food person and sick and dead soon, or you want to eat real food and live a life. And it's your choice. People have free choice. But you wind up choosing to be a medical patient at that point. You choose the fast food path, and you're going to get to see your doctor a lot, and you're going to be taking a lot of pills, and you're going to lie down on an operating table a few times
really
along the way as well.
That people, they really, really fight it. But there's a lot of positive things that are going on, too. There was, I don't know if you caught this, but I saw it online, actually, but on 60 Minutes, there was a Spanish chef, Jose Andres, who was on, and he was talking, he's not vegetarian, but he's starting to make more vegetarian meals, and talking that meat is overrated and slightly boring, he says, and he believes the future is vegetables and fruits. And the way he describes it is really, it's a great thing, because he talks about how a piece of meat you chew in the first 5 seconds, you get all the juices in your mouth, and then it's gone. And in the next 20 more seconds or so, it's tasteless. And it doesn't happen with a fruit like a pineapple or an asparagus or a pea. The flavor just keeps on coming. And
interesting point. Yeah.
Yeah, I've never heard it put that way, and I was really excited when I heard it. I experience it all the time. I'm a big fruit and vegetable fan, and I can't talk enough about how I love my food.
Right. Well, fascinating piece here. A colleague of mine, Dr. John McDougall, is a plant-based nutrition physician here in California, and he's working with the Sacramento Food Bank. And fascinating story, which in a way epitomizes the problem, the issues in America. The people in the food bank, which God knows are getting more and more business these days as people rely more and more on food bank, and these are community-minded folks running the food bank. They want the best for their community, which are often less economically or the economically disadvantaged, I guess. Well, the food bank, because they rely on donations, and the junk foods are the cheapest, the sugar is cheap, they're passing out lots of chips and Oreos and lots of fast food junk food stuff. Well, they realize over the recent years they're watching their beloved clients get fatter and sicker, and they had a meeting and say, we're part of their problem. We're trying to help them, and the reality is we're making our clients clients sick. We're adding to their health problems. We think we're trying to save their, keep them starving, but the truth is we're making them diabetic and hypertensive and causing their, we're part of their problem. And they contacted Dr. McDougall, who went over there. There's a nice piece on the internet on it. And the Sacramento Food Banks went out to the various produce farmers in the area and are getting donations of fruits and vegetables, and they're loading the baskets up now with fruits and veggies for the people at the food bank, and the people are getting leaner and healthier, and their blood pressure's going down, and it's even found its way into this very fundamental service that's being done, and it's a model for food banks all around, and of course for families, whether or not you're involved in a food bank. But if people Google Sacramento Food Bank and plant-based diet program in the Sacramento Food Bank, you'll see the story, and it's very inspiring, exciting, and it's really what we need to be doing, especially with the young people.
Right.
Get your kids to like fruits and vegetables early, folks. Feed them apples and bananas early. Don't feed them chocolate bars.
Yeah, I ride the subway in Manhattan very often, and it's really sad when I see the young parents feeding their very young children such garbage in their bottles,
God.
And just giving them a bag of chips, and it's just really sad.
Really, it sets the pattern for life. It's easy to seduce a child with sugar and fat. Fat, sugar, and salt taste good. But meanwhile, it's delicious poison. It ultimately leads to death. Of ultimately, I guess that too. But their unhappiness. You wind up the fat child, the overweight child, is in a particular hell for their lives. They become fat adults. But being the fat kid in school is just dreadful. Every time they look in the mirror, every time they go to gym class, every time there's a social event or the fat kid in school, please spare your child that particular dreadful burden. Plus, they become overweight adults with all the medical curses of diabetes and high blood pressure and arthritis and all the things that come from that. And so those good habits instilled early is just one of the greatest gifts you can give your child.
Now, a lot of people ask, don't we need meat? Isn't there something in meat that we need, and aren't vegans suffering from one thing or another? I know you've studied vegans.
Right. That's an interesting question, and the straight scientific answer is no. On a strictly medical level, the body is capable of synthesizing all the nutrients we need from plant-based foods, and there's vegetarians who've been vegan since birth and lived to be 100, and that alone proves the point. Plus, there's no end of vegetarian athletes, tennis players, runners, cyclists. The human body works just great on a plant-based diet. That said, everybody knows, either people say, listen, I've got to have some protein, the euphemism for meat, or I used to be a vegan and I got sort of skinny and didn't feel good, and then I added some meat back to my diet and I feel better. It may well be that if you grow up on a meat-based diet and your body gets used to preformed carnitine and various meat-based substances coming in, so your liver hasn't been making it, and you suddenly pull that out by becoming vegan on a plant-based diet, it may be that you miss some of that, and you may feel some adverse effects. If that's the case, that may or may not go away. Then if you want to have, some wild-caught salmon in your diet once a week or so, view it as a medicine, do it as medicinal and fine. I'm past the point of arguing about that, but view it as that, this is like a vitamin tablet that I need once a month or twice a month, makes me feel better, okay. But that's a whole lot different than two cheeseburgers and a hot dog for lunch and a 16-ounce porterhouse steak for dinner and this never-ending stream of bacon and eggs for breakfast and cheeseburgers for lunch and chicken for dinner, and, you know, to eat flesh 3 and 4 times a day and follow it with dairy processed cheese and milk and yogurt, and this stream of animal fat and animal protein that is flooding through our system day after day after day, that is a lethal fuel mixture. Yeah, you know, I'm not going to, if people get down to a completely plant-based diet, but they feel better with a little piece of salmon in their wild-caught salmon in their diet once or twice a month, well, okay, there might be some nutritional benefits to that. It's certainly, if everybody got it down to that, or some might, if they got it down to, you know, a pot roast on Sunday nights, if everybody ate, you know, vegan all week and had a pot roast on Sunday night, fine.
We'd be in a lot better place.
We'd be in a lot better place, absolutely. So I don't even use the word vegan anymore. You know, people say, "Oh, you're not going to." I don't be one of those vegans. The vegan police going to come and open my refrigerator and look in there. And now you have to be a vegan. You know, but get it down to once a week, twice a week, not 3 times a day. This is the total food stream coming in is the real issue here. You want to have some meat once a week, twice a week, fine. I'm not going to quibble at this point. But we should be living, the majority of what goes into your mouth should be something that grew out of the ground, preferably in its whole natural form, whole grains, whole beans, whole fruits, whole vegetables, not all processed chips and Cokes. You know, there's chips and Twinkies and Cokes are vegan, but that doesn't make them healthy. You want whole plant-based foods. If that's the majority of what goes in your mouth, then if you want to have some animal products once a week or twice a week, fine. But even then, make it small and make it simple. Don't make it all full of fat and processed stuff and junk food, basically.
Now,
so,
I know that...
Yes, we're made to run on plants. Go ahead.
So food really affects the majority of our health issues. And
absolutely. This day and age it does, yes.
Yeah, but are there other things that living on a plant-based diet... might not be resolved, or maybe things that we need that we can't get from food, or we might need some special supplementation?
There are some supplements that certainly can help. If you are a pure vegan, if that's all you eat are whole plant foods, you do need some vitamin B12. B12 used to be in the water. We used to drink out of streams and wells, and there used to be vitamin B12 in that. We don't anymore. It was chlorinated drinking water kills the B12-producing bacteria, and so we've been cut off from our natural sources of B12. So once a week, take some vitamin B12 or have some vitamin B12 fortified, there's soy milk and various B12 fortified foods. That's true. You need that. And the only other supplements that I recommend on a fairly regular basis, for at least for vegan people, if your skin is dry, you might need some essential oils, some omega-3 fats. The initials of the ones you need is called DHA, and the body can make DHA out of the oils found in flax seeds and walnuts, but a lot of folks can't make enough DHA out of a couple of tablespoons of ground flax. So if your skin is dry and some people get depressed when there's not enough omega-3 fats, then you can get DHA derived from algae, not fish oil. This is the fat that's in fish oil, but fish do not make it. Fish swim around with their mouths open all day eating algae. It's the algae that makes the DHA, and that's what's in the fish oil. The fish didn't make it, and so we're running out of fish. We got to leave the fish alone. So instead of grinding up fish that ate algae, then get the DHA out of the algae directly. And nowadays they are harvesting DHA out of algae. So, and you can get these little capsules of algae-derived DHA. They're a nice golden yellow capsule. And take one of those a couple times a week if your skin is dry. And the only other supplement, and it has nothing to do with vegan or not, is vitamin D these days. We spend so much time inside, and we're so afraid of the sun that a lot of folks are very low in vitamin D. And so you should, people should get their vitamin D level checked. And if it's low, you might want to take some vitamin D. And the vegan form of it is vitamin D2. So taking some vitamin D2 a couple times a week.
That's I've read
about
so
the
many
only
studies
supplements
that
I recommend. I'm sorry.
I've just read so many studies about how so many different diseases now they're linking to vitamin D deficiency.
Right.
It
yeah, it's
everything.
A real sleeper of a supplement that we hadn't realized how deficient. It's involved in hundreds of different reactions, and we need to keep our vitamin D levels up. And finally, a good multivitamin mineral preparation tablet once or twice a week, just to make sure that you're not running low on manganese or some trace mineral, whatever, in your diet. That wouldn't be a bad idea either. And that's about it. You don't need handfuls of all sorts of supplements and protein powders and all that kind of stuff. But some B12, some D, maybe some DHA, and a multivitamin. And that's those are the only four supplements I really prescribe these days, unless there's a special medical condition involved.
Okay. Now, I don't know if you have the answer to this one, but I've been eating a plant-based diet for over 20 years, and I pretty much stick to the kind of diet that you described. It's really simple, little, no salt, no oil, lots of greens. I make a green juice every day. I really swear by my green juice. And but what surprises me is I have high cholesterol. It's around 220, 230.
Right,
and my sister, too.
And I have observed this as well. And we did a little study on vegans, and indeed, it's a phenomenon I call creeping cholesterol syndrome. And I see this with long-term vegans, 20-year vegans and longer, their cholesterol starts creeping up. It's where you're supposed to be below 150, and I got mm-hmm. vegans with cholesterol 210, 220, 230, and they're all freaked out about it. I'm not, and I'm glad you brought this up, Karen, and I wanted to make it clear to you and to all your listeners. The real issue is not how high is your cholesterol. The real issue is how clean are your arteries? Is this mm-hmm. stuff sticking to your arteries and causing plaque? And so in our few minutes here, let me go into this. It's a very important issue. If you have a cholesterol of 240, it's true, statistically, over 300 million Americans, people with cholesterol 240 are at higher risk for heart attacks and strokes and all that stuff. That's true. But like with all statistics, it falls apart when they come to the individual person. In other words, if I have two people with a cholesterol of 240, one of them is a vegan person, normal body weight, doesn't smoke, exercise every day, happy, no family history of heart disease. That 240 is just what their liver needs to have in their bloodstream, because your body uses cholesterol for all sorts of good things. It makes hormones out of it, makes nerve sheaths out of it. You thank God for cholesterol. You need it, and your liver synthesizes it, and your liver needs to have 240 milligrams of cholesterol in your blood, and that's fine. That 240 cholesterol is a very different number in Joe's six pack. Some guy who's 60 pounds overweight, he's smoking two packs of cigarettes every day. He's fighting with his boss. He never exercises. His father, two brothers, and uncle all died of heart attacks at age 40. Oh, man, that 240 number in him is a very different number. And so the real issue is not how high is your cholesterol. If your cholesterol is 240 and your arteries are clean, don't worry about it.
How do I know my arteries are clean?
Right. So there's some simple ways to do it. One, go to your doctor, have them take out their ophthalmoscope, look in your eyes. You have them look in your eyes. The back of your eyes and your retinal vessels is where you can see your arteries directly. And when the arteries get all loaded up with cholesterol, you can see the changes in the arteries. So say, doctor, please look at my retinal vessels. Are they clean? And then have her send you over to the ultrasound department at the hospital or at the local x-ray store. Lay down the table and have them take the ultrasound wand and put them on your neck and on your belly, and have them do an ultrasound scan of your carotid arteries in your neck and your abdominal aorta. And if they're all clean and there's no swirls and eddies and signs of plaque there, if you got nice laminar flow in your blood vessels, then your arteries are clean. And that 240 is not causing you any harm. And don't lose any sleep over it. It's what your body needs. needs. If you follow these vegans along with the 240s, they don't die of heart attacks and strokes. So the issue isn't how high is your cholesterol. The issue is how clean your arteries. Stay active, stay healthy, eat a plant-based diet, take a walk every day, laugh a lot, don't smoke, and don't look in the rearview mirror, and you'll want to be fine.
That was great. That's really good information. That's something I never heard. So I really appreciate that. That's really a great bit of advice and really made my day.
Great.
Well, we've come to
the
end. We've come to the end of the hour, and I wish we could talk a lot more because you have just so much great information that everyone really needs to hear. We should have the Dr. Clapper show on television.
Maybe we'll get around to that one day.
Yeah.
Appreciate the compliment.
Thank you so
much.
It's a
great service you're doing, bringing this information out to your public. You're doing them a great service. It's really an educational endeavor. We've got to educate the public, educate the kids, and set the example. You know, it's what your kids watch you eating for lunch and dinner, what you make them, that's the important thing. So lead by example, and everything will get better.
Okay, great. Thank you. And go back to your patients and take care of them, and just have a great day and be well.
Thank you very much, Karen. All the best to you and your listeners.
Thank you. That was Dr. Michael Clapper. Goodbye, and thank you so much. So you're listening to It's All About Food. I'm your host, Karen Hartglass. And next week, please listen. We're going to be talking with DeSanto Molina, who's a nutrition consultant and dietitian. We're going to be talking more about food, healthy food. And you can email me your comments and questions anytime at info@realmeals.org. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.